The use of quotas as a mechanism for the political empowerment of women has not been free of controversy, as illustrated by the story about Norway. Some, repeating the meritocracy argument, insist that quotas violate the principles of liberal democracy, which should allow voters to make the ultimate decision on who gets elected. Others argue that quotas, far from introducing a discriminatory practice, are actually a sensible way to compensate for long-standing barriers that have prevented women from being adequately represented. In a historically male-dominated political system, women's qualifications and suitability for office have been consistently downgraded. As a result, the world has not been able to benefit from the insights and experience that women could have brought to political decision-making. A less charitable way to express this is to say that humanity has actually suffered immeasurably as a result of decision-making biases that are the direct result of a male-dominated political landscape. According to certain thinkers, we need only glance back at the blood-soaked 20th century and gauge the impact of its violent and grisly excesses to confirm this fact. Indeed, if we look more critically at current habits and practices in our highly vaunted democracies, we see that political parties, rather than voters, control the nominations in most countries. In other words, contrary to received opinion, quotas in no way violate voters' rights and are therefore quite in keeping with democratic principles. More and more countries are making use of electoral quotas. In some cases, such as Uganda, the Philippines, Nepal, and Burkina Faso, constitutions are being amended to this end. There are other examples in much of Latin America, Belgium, France, and Slovenia, for instance, where changes are being introduced to electoral laws. Such adjustments in the law can produce healthy results, and their demonstrated effectiveness can lead to rapid emulation. Argentina, for instance, was the first country in Latin America to introduce candidate quotas in 1991, with party electoral lists required to have a minimum of 30% women among candidates for all national elections. Other countries in the region followed suit in the ensuing years. Progress is taking place even in countries where women were traditionally proscribed from any role in elected bodies. In early 2011, for instance, Saudi Arabia issued a royal order amending the composition of the previously all-male 150-member consultative council by allocating 20% of its seats for women members. According to UN Women, as of June 2016, out of the 46 countries that had single or lower houses composed of more than 30% women, quote, 40 had applied some form of quotas, either legislative candidate quotas or reserved seats, opening space for women's political participation, unquote. Such progress is encouraging, but there are also examples of inertia that impede development. As of May 2017, India, for instance, had quotas at the subnational level, but not for its national parliament, where the share of women members was only 11.6%, some 12 percentage points below the global average. A constitutional amendment to establish a 33% quota for women in parliament has been debated many times since it was first introduced in 1996, but has faced stiff opposition from some parties on the grounds that upper caste women will displace lower caste men. In addition, women's organizations have opposed the introduction of a system of sub-quotas within an overall quota for women, with some shares being allocated to lower caste women, Muslim women, and other groups. So the politics of gender quotas have fallen victim to the nastier politics of caste. Clearly, even among the emerging economic giants of the world, much work remains to be done, which might account for the previously mentioned disparities in the allocation of resources in India. There are also many countries where there is a substantial gap between the quotas set by the law and the actual results on the ground. In some cases, despite every effort to ensure parity, women are being placed at the bottom of party electoral lists. Quotas are clearly not an end in themselves. They are meant to be an instrument to achieve a better outcome for women, a tool to boost the sharing of prosperity in countries. It is hoped that they will not be needed in the future as people understand the value of having women in decision-making positions and social norms change. But although quotas remain controversial, the discussion about them reflects a shift in the broader debate about equality. There is an increased tendency to move away from an emphasis on the desirability of equality of opportunity, meaning in this particular context the removal of barriers that prevent women from voting, towards the need to ensure equality of outcomes or results. If women are still grossly underrepresented in political decision-making bodies, half a century after the removal of restrictions on voting rights, then other means have to be used to ensure a speedier removal of the 1,001 hidden barriers that have impeded and curtailed their political empowerment. Radical decisions have to be taken, and more effective means for their implementation have to be found in order to ensure that women can more rapidly and actively contribute to improving social welfare. In respect of this wider debate, the evidence in a number of different studies is really quite encouraging. For instance, some countries with quotas for women in parliament show higher female labor force participation rates. Quotas also appear to have an impact on government spending priorities. These studies reveal that there is greater spending on social services and welfare in those countries where quotas are implemented. In other words, quotas have begun to ensure that the quality of political decisions will differ. A 1993 study carried out in India looking at data for 265 village councils found that once a quota established a one-third share for female membership, there was considerably more investment in infrastructures relevant to the needs of women and children. Also in India, a 2004 study on panchayats, local councils, discovered that the number of drinking water projects in areas with female-led councils was 62% higher than in those with male-led councils. Quotas may also have far-reaching and meaningful results for gender equality in the Indian state of West Bengal. Since 1998, one-third of village council leader positions in this area were reserved for women on an ad hoc basis. The study explored the effects of this policy for two electoral cycles, or 10 years. The findings are fascinating. Initially, public opinion towards female leaders was negative, and villagers rated female leaders as less effective than men, despite similar performance. However, exposure to female councillors over a 10-year span altered perceptions of gender roles, both in society and in the home. The negative bias male villagers held towards the effectiveness of female local leaders was gradually reduced. After 10 years, women were more likely to run and win local-level political races in villages that had instituted the quotas for positions unaffected by them. So, while quotas may not be an end in and of themselves, they clearly can achieve positive ends.